Let's see, Linda, do you have any announcements this evening?
Yes, as I was turning off my cell phone.
Okay.
if we can silence our cell phones. And I think that's the only announcement I can think of.
Oh, okay.
I think we're good.
Thank you. So welcome, everyone, to our second class in the Discovering Buddhism module on relating to a spiritual teacher. Let's see, do we have some people who are here tonight who weren't here last week? Oh, couple, okay. Shouldn't be a problem. We didn't cover a whole lot of material last week. Do we have some people who were here last week who aren't here tonight? Nobody's answering that one. Okay. Let's start off with some prayers in the gold prayer book. It's either on the desk in front of you or in the back of the chair in front of you. Turn to page 34, where it says Sunday prayers. Let me look and see. And we'll do these in English. I think if you've done some of the other modules, they've been explained, so I'm not going to go over them tonight. If you're not familiar with them, just kind of go with the flow. We'll start on page 34 with Taking Refuge and Generating Bodhicitta in the middle of the page. We'll recite that three times. Then we'll do the Four Immeasurables, Seven Limb Prayer, and the Short Mandala Offering, all in English. It said the prayers help prepare our mind so that we'll get the most benefit from the discussion that's to follow. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha by my practice of giving and other perfections. May I become a Buddha to benefit also. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative action accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence, and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamnirya Tayami. And we'll begin with some meditation. Similar meditation to what we did last week. So begin by checking your posture. Whether you're sitting on the floor or in a chair, your back is a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Not rigidly straight, but just a little bit more erect. Your head is on your shoulders, straight, not tilted to one side or the other, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes either slightly open or lightly closed. Lips slightly closed, not pursed tight. Tongue on the ridge of the gum above the upper teeth. Chin relaxed. Shoulders down, a little bit back, so your chest is open. Arms away from your torso, and either hands on your knees or right hand on left with thumbs touching. And your legs are in a position that you find comfortable, stable, and non-distracting. If you're sitting in a chair, it's fine to have a cushion underneath your feet. If you're sitting on a cushion on the floor, sit a little bit to the front of the cushion, maybe the front third, so you're not tilted back. And your pelvis can open. And your legs are either crossed or just one in front of the other in a position that you find comfortable and non-distracting. The point of the posture is to establish it and then let it maintain itself, so you don't need to pay a lot of attention to it during the meditation. So take a moment, starting at the top of your head, working down, and just scan your body for any sites of tension or any discomfort, and address those now so they won't come up during the meditation that follows. And now begin the meditation by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen so that the stomach expands on the in-breath, the diaphragm is pulled down, and then the stomach contracts towards the spine on the exhalation. Do that for three deep breaths. And now allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we begin by setting our motivation for the meditation that's to follow. And any motivation is fine. If we just came for a little peace and quiet tonight, that's great. Or if we wanted to learn a little bit about Buddhism, that's fine. But it's always said that the highest motivation, the most powerful, the most energizing, is what's referred to as the bodhicitta motivation. The thought that I am going to become enlightened for the benefit of others. That I am doing this meditation for the next few minutes to change my mind into its ultimate qualities of compassion and wisdom so that I can be of benefit to others. Not the way we think most of the time. But take a moment and just generate that motivation, even if it doesn't seem easy or natural. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation. A very simple, but not necessarily easy, concentration meditation. We place the mind, the consciousness, the awareness on the movement of air in and out through the openings of our nostrils. Simply movement of air. Nothing more, nothing less. Direct perception, so that the mind and the breath, it's as if they become the same. The mind and what it perceives are indistinguishable. So just that very simple awareness. And every time we notice, as inevitably will happen, the mind has wandered off to another object, something more exciting or interesting, we just gently set that aside and come back to the breath. Over and over and over again. And as always, we end our meditation with a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something positive for the past few minutes, something that has made a positive imprint on our mental continuum. And we think, may that positive imprint not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that is of benefit to all living beings. Any questions about that practice? Remember, if you're going to make a comment or ask a question, speak into the microphone that we'll pass around so people who are not here can listen in. Okay. Since we're a small group, I'd like to ask people just to take a couple minutes and introduce yourself to the people sitting around you. And so we'll get to know each other a little bit better. Just say hello. How are you doing? Good evening. Okay. Okay, for the homework, I asked people to think about what are some of the things that they have learned from a teacher. And is there anything that you've learned that you haven't learned from a teacher that you learned completely on your own? Anybody have anything that they'd want to... what have people learned from teachers? Yeah.
From having taught for 21 years, I actually learned more from my students than I actually did from any teacher.
Okay. What kind of things do you learn from your students?
Things I can't talk about.
Okay.
Patience from students.
How many people here are teachers and professionally? Or okay, great. Okay, anyone else?
You're looking like maybe.
Okay, what I've learned, I'm going to piggyback on him, from students particularly, is that there are so many ways to solve a problem, and never underestimate where a solution comes from.
Okay.
Because I think that's the most valuable thing students always teach me. Mm-hmm. What I've learned from teachers, sometimes it's the academics of what they're teaching me, but also sometimes it's what the relationship taught me.
Mm-hmm.
Some were
okay.
available to me and some weren't. And then what to do when you got either.
Okay.
Yep.
Good.
Just because I think of it often whenever we do group meditation here, and when I always had like a aha moment when I came, is that I already knew how to do breathing meditation, even though I had never taken a meditation course from somebody. Mm-hmm. But I had learned it from doctors when I was growing up and trying to manage my asthma.
Uh-huh.
And so I knew how to sit correctly. Mm-hmm. I knew how to clear all my channels, and I knew how to control my body and my breath in order to achieve these results. But my motivation was to not go to the ER. You know?
Yeah. Okay.
And I just think it's really interesting to look for teachers where you might not, you know, where the world might tell you to look for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And okay. Their experiences.
Great. Thank you.
So I tried to think of, it was easy to think of things I learned from teachers. So I had, my list was like reading and Spanish and ballet and piano, all these things that you learn.
The Buddha said that the person who teaches us to read and write is one of our greatest teachers.
Yeah.
And you know, we should be incredibly grateful to that person.
Yeah. So, and like, even like walking, you know, you learn from your parents. So I try to think what I had learned that I didn't learn from a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And what came to my mind immediately was that when I was 5 years old, I got a bicycle, but I also had my mom had a newborn baby. She couldn't teach me to ride the bike, so I went out and like kept trying to ride this bike until I finally rode it on my own, and I scraped up my knees and everything. But even then it was, you know, there were people that demonstrated riding a bike to me.
Okay.
So for me, when I did this exercise, it was like almost everything I've learned, there was some kind of interconnectedness with a teacher in some way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone demonstrated it to me, or they told me how
to
do it.
Or you just saw someone do it.
I observed them do it. It's tough to come up with something that I didn't get some help with somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone else?
The question was, what did you learn from the teacher?
Uh-huh.
I think compassion, in difficult situations where you feel you don't have it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you think compassion is something we can learn from others.
Right.
Okay.
When you can be angry or frustrated, but then you change.
Yes, a different way of responding. Okay.
So my teacher kind of helped me with that. And then what did I not learn from the teacher?
Was there anything that you know or that you've learned that did not have a teacher involved at some level?
There were many times I think I had to leave places to be in better places for my health, from my school perspective or work perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that time there's nobody to, everybody can oppose me, my decision.
Uh-huh.
So I felt like to be able to trust is that I have to depend on myself.
Okay. So that came from yourself, not from someone else. So you may have learned some of those skills in different situations in the past from other people.
Probably.
Yeah, or someone said, you know, if it's this bad, get up and leave or whatever. Anyway, I'm not saying.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's not a right or a wrong answer.
Yeah, it becomes like a situation. But this time I felt it was easy for me to leave from my job. And I didn't leave by myself. Oh, I'm selfish. I don't like this. But I also educated the people why I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So, and everybody wants to leave.
Okay. 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 Anyone else want to contribute? Yeah, over here and then over here.
So there's a lot of skills that I learned from my teachers, all different kinds. And I've noticed that when I'm really interested in learning from a teacher is because he or she has got something that I want.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had many situations where I definitely learned things from teachers in the way that they are, in a way that I don't want to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So some bad examples even can be good examples because it shows you that.
Okay.
Maybe that's not, you know, what you want to emulate. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those things.
Very important. We'll talk about that, how we pick a teacher. Yeah. And I think Slay had something to say.
I think I've learned.
Hold it a little closer. Yeah.
I think I've learned from my teachers a lot, you know, from reading and writing. But also I've learned that the people that I didn't think were my teachers became my teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned to learn from almost anyone that.
Okay.
That is aggravating me or that's bothering me or whatever. And I learned to use them as my teacher.
Yeah, that's great. That's a very Buddhist point of view that we should, we're told frequently that we should see everyone, especially the people who irritate us or seem to be doing us wrong, as actual Buddhas, enlightened beings who are doing that solely for our benefit. It's tough sometimes, very tough. Yeah. Yeah.
The thing that prompted in my mind from your question was, what is a teacher?
Mm-hmm. And can you answer that?
Well, you know, if you ride that bicycle too fast and you run into a tree, that's a real learning experience.
Uh-huh.
And what was the teacher? The tree, the bicycle, the decision you made?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just navigating, going down a highway, you get learnings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Navigating in social settings.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no didactic teacher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Different types of teaching, definitely. Okay. Thank you, everyone. A lot about teaching in general. Now we'll move into specifically the having a spiritual teacher, or as we talked about last week, a spiritual friend, or a guru, is talked about a lot in Tibetan Buddhism. It's considered a core part of the path. And for Western students, it can be a subject that is fraught with problems. We are not living in Tibet in a monastery where we have great lamas living with us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're living in the West where the great lamas and scholars are few and far between, and we may admire them and learn from them, but it's not necessarily the sort of relationship that's talked about traditionally in Tibetan Buddhism where you actually lived with your teacher for years and years on end. So it's a very difficult process. There are lots of people out there who label themselves as teachers, and it is up to us to determine if we think agree with that label, if we think they're valid teachers. It's said in the teachings of the Buddha, if we are thinking about entering into a student-teacher relationship with someone, a serious relationship, we should observe them for a minimum of 3 years. And that can be difficult to be. I mean, a lot of people are drawn to His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, but you may not have the opportunity to actually see him in person more than once every couple of years or so, particularly now that he travels less. So the whole idea of what does the student-teacher relationship mean for Western practitioners of Buddhism is very much in a state of flux, I think. Sometimes we get very panicky and say, I've got to find my teacher. I've got to find my guru. I can't do anything on the path without a guru. And that's not a good way to approach the subject. Okay, they say when you're ready, the teacher will manifest. The teacher will appear. We shouldn't be running around searching for a teacher out of desperation. Certainly we can come to Kadampa Center or go to other places and read books and watch stuff on YouTube of all sorts of Buddhist teachers. And that's a valid way of learning, but it's not necessarily the student-teacher relationship that is historically talked about in the scriptures. So we're kind of redefining things. And it's there's no right answers. But according to the Buddha, you know, you can make great progress on your spiritual path by studying, by meditating, by discussion. But at some point, you do get to a point where you need a closer relationship with a teacher. It may be many, many years into your spiritual path, but at some point, you'll acknowledge that you do need a teacher that you can talk to and take guidance from, particularly as you get into the more advanced practices, what's referred to as Tantra, which we'll talk, are talked about in the last module in Discovering Buddhism. But those are very powerful meditation practices that speed you on your path to enlightenment. And as you enter into Tantra specifically, teacher is almost mandatory. Trying to do tantric practices without a relationship with a trusted, reliable spiritual friend is a recipe for disaster. And there are all sorts of stories about Western students who've gotten themselves into real problems by doing tantric meditations that their mind is not really ready for. But that's, for most of us, that's way off, far down the path. We're in what's referred to as the sutra aspect of the path, the open teachings of the Buddhism, which we can all find in books, and we can find lectures on the internet, and we can go visit other teachers, and we should be open to all of this and look for what speaks to us, because the Buddha said, always test it out against your own experience. Use your innate intelligence. Does what this person says ring true to me? Does that jive with my experience? Or is there something off here? And your instincts can be very helpful in this. Instincts are lots of times based on wisdom, so you use your intellect and your instincts to evaluate the teacher. Okay, so more specifically, if we're looking for a spiritual teacher, maybe not someone we're going to have a one-on-one relationship, but someone that we want to attend their teachings regularly, someone that we want to put some effort into getting some value from their teachings, the Buddha said there are 10 qualities that we should look for as part of this process of evaluating a spiritual guide or a spiritual friend. And I'm just going to list them, and then we'll go through and talk a little bit about what these might mean. The qualities we look for in a spiritual friend, and there are lots of ways these are expressed. This is from a teaching by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. A disciplined mind. These are good to know. I don't think you have to memorize them necessarily. A calmed mind. And this next one sounds redundant, but it's a thoroughly calmed mind. I'll explain the difference between those two. Knows more than the student. Or if we're make it personal, knows more than me. Energy and enthusiasm for teaching. Vast resources of learning. Next one's a heavy one. Realization of emptiness. Skill in presenting the Dharma. compassion for the student. And this is a good one. Commitment to the student. Okay. So these are 10 qualities to look for. And this came down from the Buddha through various paths. Who was here yesterday, Sunday morning? A lot of people, yeah. It's not, I don't know how you got two doses of me. That's just the luck of the draw. But some of this overlaps. What did I talk? Anybody remember what I talked about yesterday morning? What was the big subject? Ethics, and that was part of what was the bigger topic? Does anybody remember the term I used? You know, a list of, yeah, three things, yeah. Yeah, there were three of, it's called the three higher trainings, okay. These are the practices of a bodhicitta, of a bodhisattva on their way to enlightenment. Someone who's not a Buddha, but is on that path. So the first three really refer to the three higher trainings, okay? A disciplined mind means someone who behaves ethically. Okay, this is ethics. Their actions, their speech, and though we can't observe it, even their thoughts are non-harming, do not harm others. Okay, so someone who behaves ethically. That's the first higher training, and that's what's called the disciplined mind, okay? A calmed mind means that the teacher has developed concentration, the ability to keep the mind focused, okay? Has developed some powers of concentration, of ability to keep the mind on a particular subject. And that gives the appearance of a calm mind, okay? A non-disturbed, a not agitated mind, okay? A thoroughly calmed mind is someone who has developed wisdom. Not only are they concentrated, but they are wise. Okay, what do we mean when we talk about wisdom inside a Buddhist Gompa? What does the word wisdom mean in here? Yeah, you can just shout it out. We don't need to. Yeah, well, give me a more simpler way of explaining it. Seeing things as they exist. Being able to discard all the projections and the emotions that we apply to things and seeing things as they truly are. And that's said to be a level of calmness even beyond great concentration. So if we're looking for a teacher, we would want to see, according to the gold standard, someone who is practicing the three higher trainings, who behaves and speaks ethically, who has a calm, non-agitated mind, and seems to have some understanding of reality, of seeing things how they are. So those are the first three things we look for, the three higher trainings. We have a question here. Do we have a mic? Or just go ahead and say an hour.
Samadhi impermanence?
Hmm?
Sila Samadhi impermanence?
What do you mean by those terms? Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I'm not an expert on that, okay? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, these are the first three things we look for. And it's not like we should come to Kadampa Center on Sunday morning and have this 10 checklist and give Geshe Gelert pluses or minuses. You say, yeah, he's got that one. I'm not so sure about that one. These are things just to keep in your mind as you spend more time around someone like Geshe Gelert or Lama Zopa Rinpoche when he comes to visit or when you go to a teaching with the Dalai Lama and you're in a enormous auditorium with 10,000 other people. Look and see if you see these qualities there. Don't try and see things that aren't there, but see if you get any sense of these. Okay, the next thing, knows more than the student. Okay, that if you want to learn about the Dharma from a teacher, you should find a teacher who knows more than you do. That's kind of a given. Okay, you wouldn't go to learn about Dharma from someone who knows less about Dharma. You may be able to learn other things from them, how to play the piano or something or other. But if you're looking for a Dharma teacher, look for someone who knows more than you. Okay, again, that's something you determine by listening. Energy and enthusiasm. Okay. That's Venerable Rabina, isn't it? Yeah. She's got that one in excess, okay? And, of course, energy and enthusiasm are going to present in different ways. It doesn't mean that they're always going to be giving teaching 7 nights a week or that they'll go till midnight or 3 or 4 in the morning, as Lama Zopa used to do quite frequently. He does less so now. But, you know, you can pick up on the energy of a teacher, whether they're enjoying what they're doing, whether they think it's valuable, if they're not just going through the rotes. Vast resources of learning. This means someone who's familiar with, if not the whole path, large sections of it. If you want a spiritual Dharma teacher, you don't want as your main teacher someone who only knows one meditation practice, and that's all they can teach you, because you may need other practices. So you want someone who has a vast repertoire or a vast assortment of arrows in their quiver. If you go to the teacher and say, I'm having this problem, they can reach in there and pick out the right remedy for you. They can open their medicine cabinet and say, this will help you, or try this, that they're not just very limited. Though you can learn one thing from the person is very limited. For a general spiritual teacher, you want someone who can draw on the whole panoply of Buddhist methods. Okay. Realization of emptiness. This is, you jumped to number 7. Yeah, it's connected with wisdom. Realization of emptiness. Again, if you go up and ask Geshe Gelug if you realized emptiness, he's not going to give you a straight answer. Okay? If you ask the Dalai Lama, are you enlightened? He says, no, I'm just a simple monk. Or he may not say no. He'll say, I'm just a simple monk. They're not going to lie to you, but they're not going to flaunt their achievements. But someone who has realized emptiness, or at least has a deep understanding of it, is someone who sees that things don't exist the way we think they do. So it's part of kind of the flip side of wisdom. And this is something that you can understand from the way someone talks, the way someone acts. It's something you can pick up by being around them. Okay, skill in presenting the Dharma, and they use the word eloquence. How many people here have heard Lama Zopa Rinpoche teach? It's a unique style, isn't it? I mean, he breaks all the rules of public presentation as you would learn. He's constantly clearing his throat. He repeats himself. He mumbles. He seems to wander way off the topic, though he always comes back eventually. But there's something about the way he presents the Dharma that for thousands of people around the world, you know, is just in a class by itself. It doesn't mean necessarily being slick or polished or, a Dale Carnegie sort of speaker, but having a way of presenting the Dharma that speaks to people. Now, it may not speak to everyone, but when you're looking for a teacher for yourself, you want someone who presents the Dharma in a way that you get it, so to speak. Okay, some people say they can't put up with Lama Zopa's teaching style, and they find another teacher. That's great. you know, one teacher is not going to speak to every student in the whole world. This is you looking for your teacher or for a teacher. Find someone who has skill in presenting the Dharma in a way that speaks to you. Okay? Compassion for the student. That's pretty straightforward. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama says this may be the most important quality of all. What does compassion mean in Buddhist jargon? What do we mean by compassion? Yeah. Yeah, wanting someone to be removed from their suffering. So the sense that the teacher wants to help you stop suffering. A sense of that, okay? His Holiness the Dalai Lama says this may be the single most important quality in looking for teachers. And number 10 is commitment to the student. And His Holiness says specifically, being willing to repeat the same thing over and over and not getting discouraged by that. And it made me laugh, because if people come to Geshe Gelug's teachings on Wednesday evening, sometimes he'll ask everyone here about something he talked about the week before, and it'll be total blankness. You know, it's like people never heard anything he said before. And he doesn't let that get him down, okay? That commitment to saying it over and over, however many times needs to be. And we all know that good teachers do that. And not getting discouraged by that is a quality we can look for. Okay? So the first three are the three higher trainings. Look for some evidence of that. And these are other than these other things. Comments, questions?
I have one from the reading. I'm not
yeah.
sure if this is just some Sanskrit or something that I don't understand. It said specific ignorance can only be cut by the prasangika view of emptiness.
Okay. That's way beyond where we are, okay? Oh. Yeah, and you'll find lots of stuff in these readings that's may not seem relevant to what we're talking about, but that prasangika, there are various schools, okay, and Chittamantra Sautantrika, and prasangika is considered the highest for various schools that differ in how they explain what reality is and how things really exist. And it's not that the higher ones contradict the lower ones, but they give a more accurate description. It's like you have a microscope and you start off at 3 times the actual size, and then you go to 10 times the actual size, and you still see what was there before, but you see things that you didn't see before. And then you go to 100 magnification. So the prasangika, or sometimes it's even referred to as the Madhyamika prasangika, is considered the most accurate description of reality, of how things exist. And it, all the schools do this, but it is said to form the most complete balance between, on one hand, nothing exists, and on the other hand, things exist inherently. And the Madhyamika Prasangika is the Goldilocks school right in the middle. Not too non-existent, not too inherently existent. Okay. So, yeah. The middle way. Yes, exactly. Yes, the middle way. We use a lot in reference to lots of things. Okay, any questions or comments? Yeah, over here.
So, I don't really understand how, if you haven't realized emptiness, and the teacher won't tell you if they have,
mm-hmm.
how you can ever figure out if the teacher actually has done that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't know what I was even looking for in the way that they talk if
uh-huh.
I haven't actually done it myself.
Yeah. Well, you've got, theoretically, you've got 3 years during which time you're studying emptiness from an intellectual point of view, and you start to get some taste for it. And I think if you understand the have an intellectual understanding of emptiness. My experience is if you go to hear Lama Zopa Rinpoche talk, you will pick up fairly quickly that he has a much deeper, at least understanding of it, if not a realization is a term that's used when something just is in your mind. You don't have to bring it up. It's just there continuously as a baseline of the way you see the world. I think most people will get a sense of, from Lama Zopa Rinpoche, that he has a very deep understanding of emptiness, and it's something that he's thinking about all the time. That's my experience. But yeah, you're not going to go to a teacher with your own realization of emptiness. Yeah. Yeah. So we're looking for qualities that we don't have. Okay. We're looking for someone who is more compassionate than we are. We have a little bit of compassion. We know what compassion is, but we're looking for a teacher who is more compassionate than we are, who is more perceptive of reality than we are. Okay, so it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy in that the more we develop those qualities in ourselves, the easier it is for us to recognize it in a teacher. So, you know, we may start off with just a little bit of compassion and think, oh, His Holiness is the Dalai Lama, he's a nice guy. You know, as we become more compassionate, we start to see the depth of his compassion more. Okay. It's like they said in the video that we watched last week. I don't think you were here. It says, be very careful when you pick your teacher or your teachers, because that's what you're going to become if you have a true student teacher relationship with them. You develop the same qualities that you see and admire in the teacher. Not that you become a clone of them, but the same quality. If you see compassion in the teacher, that's what you can become. Okay? Yeah.
I love the Sangha here, and I think it's so amazing that we have the Geshe's and everything. But my question is about what if you see, like, a visiting teacher, or if you really identify with Lama Zopa, for instance,
mm-hmm.
to what level of involvement is realistic for a student and teacher like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, I personally see Lama Zopa as one of my main teachers, but I see him the maximum once a year. You know, I try and see him once a year, but I don't always succeed in that because he's traveling around the world. So I like to see him physically once a year, even though I don't succeed. Otherwise, I read about him on the internet. I watch videos. I read his books. And, you know, sometimes I forget about him completely. But, you know, I regard him personally as one of my teachers. You know, I can count on two hands the number of personal interviews I've had with him. And, you know, typically they're like in 4 a.m. after he's finished his teaching. So he does have lots of students that he meets with one-on-one, but that's after you've gone to his teachings a lot. And then there are many, many people who see His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, as their main teacher. And they've never spoken to him one-on-one. They've never been around him with fewer than 5,000 people. So it's changing a lot. Yeah. As opposed to in the mountains of Tibet where you lived in the house with your guru and were there all the time. Yeah.
So that follows up my question. When I was doing my meditations last week thinking about teachers, I was also thinking about what are the qualities of a student,
yeah,
and what are the requirements for a student to actually call themselves a student.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I could call somebody else my teacher, but would they also, you know, reciprocate and call me a student?
Yeah. I mean, it's again, there are varying degrees of that, and we're going to talk about that more next week, the qualities of a student. What does it take for you to call yourself a student? What were some of the things you came up with? If you don't
well,
know
a
that?
Lot of them were kind of the negative side, like, well, I haven't taken this person's teachings in longer than I would wish to, and kind of go into the more should have, you know, could have, ought to, you
mm-hmm.
know, side of a student feeling guilty. But then that, I think that was in one of the readings, was about you wanting, as a student, you want to be that positive shame,
mm-hmm.
you know, of like, you want to act virtuous when they're around. And so then maybe a quality of a student, if you're not able to be with your teacher all the time, is visualizing your
yeah,
teacher.
Exactly.
Being able to
yeah.
have them present with you, even not physically, but
yeah.
in your meditation.
And you use that in your meditations.
Right.
Exactly.
So then you don't have the should have ought to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Just three things they say, three qualities a student should have. We'll talk about this more next week, but just to touch on them briefly, an open mind, okay? The ability to judge between right and wrong. Mm-hmm. This is very important, you know, that you don't accept someone if you find their behavior unskillful or it agitates your mind. There's a lot of that. You know, you hear a lot of stuff about sexual misconduct, about use of alcohol and so on, various teachers. And then enthusiasm. Okay, so that's a very simple way of saying the qualities a student should have. But it's also said in the teachings that our teacher is more important to us than the historical Buddha. The person that we actually learn the Dharma from is actually of more importance, more significant in our spiritual training than the actual historical Buddha who gave us all these teachings. Because the teacher, if he's a highly realized teacher, is the living embodiment of what the historical Buddha taught. He makes it real. He takes it out of the book where it's just words on a page and makes it flesh and blood. Okay, gives the juice to it. So the living teacher is more important than the historical Buddha, it said. And that's why we should be very, very careful about choosing a teacher. It's far better not to choose a teacher than to choose one who's going to cause problems for you, who agitates your mind. So I think we had a question over here. We need to learn to toss this thing. Let's practice the mic toss, okay? Yeah.
No, I understand the concept of reverence, spiritual reverence.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that here in class we're mostly talking about the spiritual friend as opposed to like guru devotion.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to that yet.
I do have a question though, if you don't mind me asking.
No, go ahead. I may not be able to answer it. Yeah.
Because as when I saw the film that we were watching, the
yeah.
very first thing that came to mind is attachment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And as we were talking about, you know, the reference for, there is a fine line, but what I saw there,
yeah,
I had a really hard time believing that that was a non-attached.
Uh-huh. Oh, I think that's complete. I think the people speaking would say that there is, at the level that they're at in their practice, there is some attachment.
But it's one of the three poisons.
Yeah, but we have to be realistic about where we are. For most of us, you know, our minds is not free of either anger or attachment, or ignorance. At least we can start to become attached to virtuous objects. Okay. Now, I can't read their minds and say, you know, but attachment, if it's going to arise, we may try and use it in a positive way. But attachment ultimately is a cause of suffering, yeah. So I think it's very possible to become overly attached to lose your ability to judge right and wrong. I mean, you should always use the intelligence that you have, but attachment can lead to huge problems in the student-teacher relationship. Yeah, so that's a good point. Yeah. Anyone else? Okay. So, we're going to do another meditation. This is going to be what's called a review meditation. And we're just going to review some of the material that we've talked about, the qualities of a teacher. So to some people, it may seem like we're just thinking, but that's okay. We're just going to be using our mind's ability to think and analyze to take some of this to a deeper level.
Okay.
So begin by checking your posture. I think most of you are familiar with it by now. See if I can get falling off my cushion. Identify any sources of tension now. And take 3 deep breaths from your abdomen. And allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. And set your motivation. Generating the bodhicitta motivation. And now we'll do just a couple minutes of breathing meditation to allow our mind to calm down, to become more focused, more concentrated, not drowsy, but quite alert, but focused. So just place the concentration on the breath for the next couple minutes. And now that our mind is more focused and calmer, we begin our review meditation, which means that we turn our awareness to each of the qualities of a valid spiritual teacher. What qualities would we look for in choosing the perfect spiritual friend? And there are 10 that we look for, so we'll just go through them in order, and we just place our concentration on that quality, thinking about what that means. And again, whenever our mind wanders off to another thought, we bring it back to the chosen object. The first quality we look for is a disciplined mind, a mind that behaves ethically, both in speech and in actions, a mind that does not harm others. The next quality we look for is a calmed mind, a mind that has developed the ability to meditate and stay concentrated, to stay focused, that has a quality of clarity about it. And the next quality we look for is that of a thoroughly calmed mind, a mind that has developed the wisdom of seeing things as they are, and in particular sees the lack of self in all phenomena. And the next quality we look for is that the teacher has more knowledge than I do. That if I go to the teacher, he can teach me what I don't know. Thank you. And next we look to see if the teacher demonstrates energy and enthusiasm for teaching his students. However that may show up, and it can show up in many different ways. And next we look for whether the teacher has vast resources that he can draw upon, both experiential and intellectual, not just the master of one narrow area, but at least has familiarity with the scope of the Dharma that we wish to learn. Next, we look to see that the teacher has a realization, or at least some deeper understanding than I do, of emptiness, of how everything comes into existence, exists, and fades away. And we look for a teacher who has skill and eloquence in presenting the Dharma so that her teachings are effective and reach the student. And perhaps most important of all, we look for a teacher who has deep compassion and concern for the well-being of the student. And last, we look for a teacher who has commitment to the students, not getting discouraged with how slow their practice is, their progress is, always willing to repeat and to encourage students on the path. So those are 10 qualities we need to keep in mind as we look for a teacher or teachers. And we can end this meditation with a dedication. And another thing we can check out, it's not in the list, but there's certainly other things we can check out. We can check out the teacher's other students, not expecting them to be perfect or to completely embody what is being taught, but check and see if they're on a path that is similar to what we want. Okay, condemning the teacher because of the failings of the students, but look and see what they're like. That's another valid approach to this. Any questions or comments? Okay, so that is it for tonight. There is homework at the back of the room. Next week we'll talk about the qualities of a student and what the attitude of a Dharma students should be to get the most benefit from the teachings, and we'll go from there. So, we did a little dedication. Actually, yeah, that's good. Yes, okay, let's read the dedication in. Let's make it official. Thank you. Let's do Shanti Deva's dedication, which is on page 2. Where is it? 246. Thank you. Yeah. This is a dedication from the Bodhisattvacharyavatara, or the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, which was written by Master Shantideva. And the whole book is beautiful. It's probably the best loved Buddhist text, at least in Tibetan circles. And this is a wonderful dedication. And it's, you know, I like the way everything is expressed in terms of may. You know, we're aspiring for this to happen. Okay, we're not saying, God, please make this happen, but may this happen. So it's really inspiring for me. So we'll read this together on page 246. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and precious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be free. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.